This is Arts Alive for this Saturday, January 9th. I'm Brian Lauritsen. Today, if you're a teenager, World War I may seem like a world away, but two local conductors are encouraging their young players to think differently about that time in history using the power of extraordinary music.
I told the kids as a joke almost, I said, it will sound like Danish to you.
You know, I came across a quote which I thought was good, which is, if there was ever music from another planet, this is it.
Daniel Alfred Wachs is the music director of the Orange County Youth Symphony Orchestra. Yuga Kohler leads the Young Musicians Foundation Debut Orchestra. They're bringing their musicians together tomorrow at Disney Hall for a concert inspired by the World War I centenary and including that most unusual Danish piece. More with both of them in a moment. Also on the program today, violinist Moses Pogosyan is the artistic director of the Dilijan Chamber Music Series, which has been introducing LA audiences to the classical music of Armenia for 11 seasons. This week, Dilijan makes its Segerstrom Center debut with a concert that mines musical connections. We'll talk to Pogosyan later in today's program. And on Ask the Dean, how exactly do you tune a timpani? That's the question for Dean Rob Cudiera of the USC Thornton School of Music. First, here's Alan Chapman with the Arts News.
From the Arts Desk today, remembering Boulez and who will take the reins at Pasadena Playhouse. Composer and conductor Pierre Boulez passed away this week at 90, and remembrances of this man who typified the term iconoclast continue to pour in from the musical community. Boulez was known for being an imposing and exacting maestro with an incredible ear that could pick out exactly which orchestra member needed some attention. He was no stranger to Southern California. Boulez directed the Ojai Music Festival several times and was also a regular guest conductor at the L.A. Philharmonic. And he collaborated with L.A.-based architect Frank Gehry on a number of projects, including a concert hall that will bear his name when it opens in Germany later this year. Boulez's own compositions have become landmarks in modern music, but he was keen to draw connections between contemporary works and the classic composers. Ara Guzulemian, a former artistic director at Ojai and the current dean of the Juilliard School, said of Boulez, "There were enough people he terrified and angered, but personally he was a witty and charming man who delighted in laughing." I'll be bringing you a tribute to Boulez as composer and conductor on Modern Times a week from tonight at 10 p.m. The Pasadena Playhouse announced this week that artistic director Sheldon Epps is stepping down. Epps told the LA Times, "There comes a time when change is good both for the theater and for me as an artist, and 20 years felt like a significant time to make the choice and move on." Epps is credited for raising the Pasadena Playhouse to the level of prominent regional theater while diversifying its programming and audience. Several Playhouse productions went on to Broadway and Tony nominations under his leadership, including Sister Act, the musical, Baby, It's You, and Looped. Epps will become Artistic Director Emeritus of the Playhouse after the 2016-2017 season. He says he hopes to do a little directing and maybe write a book. And the Playhouse will launch a national search to find his replacement. Playhouse is also searching for a new executive director. That's the Arts News for Saturday, January 9th. On this date in 1908, Simone de Beauvoir was born in Paris. She never considered herself a philosopher, but her novels, essays, biographies, and other works have had a lasting influence on philosophy, politics, and social issues. She's probably best known for her 1949 book, The Second Sex, which helped pave the way for contemporary feminist thought. For Arts Alive, I'm Alan Chapman.
This is Arts Alive on Classical KUSC. I'm Brian Lauritsen. Spend a little time with violinist Movses Pogosyan, and he may amaze you by revealing the relatively few degrees of separation between composers and musicians that you might not have guessed had so much in common. Pogosyan is the music director of LA's Dilijan Chamber Music Series, which is dedicated to playing not just Western classical chamber music, but also classical works from Armenia. This week, Dilijan will be performing two concerts that investigate musical connections. And I spoke with Pogosyan about those concerts and the value of combining musical traditions.
I mean, it's a cliche, but it is a fact. Music is a universal language. I think example of people such as Lou Harrison, you know, who really got inspired by Eastern culture. And so in a way, it's such a wonderful fusion of absorbing and learning from different world cultures and creating something that's unique that everyone can partake. Music is amazing.
Well, let's talk about the concert coming up on Thursday at the Samueli Theater, Segerstrom Center. This is a program featuring Russian composers.
Yes.
And the big piece on the program is the piano quintet by Taneyev. If you know Tchaikovsky, then you ought to encounter Taneyev at some point, right?
That's right. And of course, he is a major figure in the history of Russian music, both as composer, as a pianist. He was Tchaikovsky's favorite performer, and also as an administrator, you would say these days. So he was a director of Moscow Conservatory for many years, and he was a great teacher. However, for some reason, his music is not performed as often outside of Russia. The quintet is, I am convinced, an absolute masterpiece, one of the greatest piano quintets written. But it's big, it's large. It takes time to learn huge first movement, romantic, but also incredibly well constructed. Just a sparkling scherzo. There is a passacaglia. He was a contrapoint specialist. So the passacaglia is quite unique, deeply passionate and romantic finale.
I'm thinking about the piano quintet. Composers didn't write as many of them as, say, string quartets,
right.
But you always got a big, important work, it seems. You mentioned Dvorak and Brahms or Shostakovich as well. What is it about this form that that has so much to say musically?
Well, I think it comes closest to perhaps recreating big orchestral level concepts, both in volume, you know, and in a breadth. Perhaps that's what attracts the composers, because there's some pages in this quintet that when everyone is involved and playing, we really sound pretty much like a big orchestra there. But also it is still a chamber piece. So the ability to create that wonderful contrast between intimacy of chamber music and orchestral big writing is quite attractive, I would imagine.
A composer we don't think of that often in the chamber music realm is Rachmaninoff, and that opens the program. Talk a little bit about the trio.
Well, it's another Moscow Conservatory graduate, right? Classmates with Scriabin, who is also on the program. And Rachmaninoff, those two piano trios that he wrote at the age of 19 and 20, piano trios number one and number two, are just fantastic pieces. We have chosen to start with trio number one, which is called Trio Elegiac. And it's written only in 4 days for his very first public concert, interestingly, where he himself performed it. It's a vintage Rachmaninoff. You know, when you listen to it, you don't think it's a work of an immature 19-year-old. There's a melancholy. There is a patient and very masterful build-up of climaxes. And there's a great understanding of course, piano.
You mentioned Scriabin, and you've got a couple of different short pieces by Scriabin on this concert as well.
Well, the program itself, I must give credit to my friend and colleague Armen Guzelimian. It's his brainchild.
Ah.
So he came up with the idea, and he was bugging me for a while about finally learning the Taneyev Quintet. And because of Scriabin's connection as a student to Taneyev, Armen thought it would be nice to include a couple of short piano pieces in the program.
And then the Shostakovich Quartet, Shostakovich is probably the great writer of string quartets other than Bartok since Beethoven. And that's definitely the case with this particular quartet.
Oh, absolutely.
Quartet.
It's one of my very favorite quartets. I still get goosebumps when I remember hearing it as a teenager for the first time. I could not believe the concentration and just this piercing tragedy that can be created with just almost uncanny efficiency. The effect of it is as of a very powerful bomb. It is born out of tragic circumstance, and this one is written dedicated to the memory of his first wife, who died in 1960, I believe. And it's in three short movements that go attacca, and a third movement, perhaps referencing the Opus 59, number 3 Beethoven Quartet, starts with yet another viola, a frenetic theme of the 16th. It's a fugue. And then everyone jumps in and hell breaks loose, basically. And after that absolutely intense experience, we suddenly segueing into this really weird, haunting and uncomfortable waltz. And it's all muted and it makes you feel kind of strange, but you cannot stop listening to it. And it leaves you in absolute state of shock.
And part of this program will travel with you to the 17th, a Dilijan concert. So the Taneyev will be performed on the 17th,
yes,
as well as the Shostakovich.
Correct.
And then other pieces, other Armenian composers' works.
That's right. You know, one of the recurring themes in my programming for Dilijan series is obviously I want to use music and perform and popularize music of Armenian composers. Therefore, the Rachmaninov had to go. And instead, the first half of the concert at Zipper Hall features the Shostakovich Quartet, but also music of four Armenian composers. The program starts with the aria and toccata for violin and piano by Shostakovich's best-known Armenian student, Lazar Sarian, a son of the perhaps greatest Armenian painter, Martiros Sarian. So that piece will be followed immediately by the Shostakovich Quartet, so the pupil and the teacher. And then we have very unusual set of three pieces for soprano and string quartet. I'm going to give the stage to my students, my UCLA students. We have a wonderful program that supports Armenian music. So it's the VAM string quartet, which are all grad students, and a wonderful soprano, Danielle Bain. They will perform three works by Geruni Chechan, perhaps the most well-known Armenian female composer, and she's still with us. She's alive in her 80s, and Alan Hovhannes, a really lovely, humorous song about a goat. This young man wanted to buy a goat, but instead he bought a present for his bride. Quite unusual for Alan Hovhannes. And Edvard Mirzoyan, who is considered the dean of Armenian Soviet music after Khachaturian's death. He is actually the founder of the Dilijan Composer's Retreat House back in late 40s or early 50s, I'm not so sure. And it became very popular not only for Armenian and Soviet composers, but actually for other renowned composers. Dmitri Shostakovich himself, he loved visiting and having his summers spent at Dilijan. And so did Benjamin Britten and Peter Pears. They spent a couple summers there. Rostropovich and Galina Vishnevskaya, they were hanging out there. So Mirzoyan was pretty much the reason that composer's retreat is there.
Well, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for coming down here.
It's my pleasure always to chat with you, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Violinist Movses Pogosyan. You can hear him perform in that all-Russian concert this Thursday at the Segerstrom Center in Costa Mesa, scfta.org for tickets. And next Sunday, he combines Russian and Armenian composers in a concert at the Dilijan Chamber Music Series' usual home, Zipper Concert Hall at the Colburn School. Dilijan.larkmusicalsociety.com for more about that concert. You're listening to Arts Alive here on Classical KUSC. I'm Brian Lauritsen. Have you missed an episode of Arts Alive? Or maybe there's an interview you'd like to hear again. Listen to any episode, anytime, with the Arts Alive podcast. Find it at kusc.org/artsalive. In a moment, we talk to two conductors about using music to get young players thinking about World War I. But now, here once again is Alan Chapman with this week's Around Town Arts Calendar.
Here's a bit of what's happening around town, starting as we always do with a free event. Tomorrow afternoon, Beethoven, Gershwin, and more, part of Music at Adat Ariel in Valley Village. The trio Trois Amis will play music by Beethoven, Gershwin, Debussy, and Brahms. The concert 2 p.m. tomorrow is free to the public, but reservations are required, and you can make that reservation at adatariel.org. And yes, I will spell that, adatariel.org. Ancient Music of Epiphany. The Joussance Early Music Ensemble celebrates Epiphany, the traditional close of the Christmas season, with a program that tells a centuries-old Italian legend. It's about a benevolent old witch who helps to guide the wise men to Bethlehem. Concert includes Italian music from the Middle Ages to the late Renaissance. The Joussance Early Music Ensemble tonight at 8 p.m. at St. Bede's Episcopal Church in Mar Vista, and tomorrow at 4 p.m. at the Church of Angels in Pasadena. Details on their website, let me spell their name, JOUYSSANCE.org. I know you'd like to hear that again. JOUYSSANCE.org. And the Kentwood Players present Lorraine Hansberry's classic family drama, A Raisin in the Sun, through the 13th of February. It's set on Chicago's South Side, and the plot revolves around the conflicts and prejudice faced by three generations of one family. Performances of A Raisin in the Sun are Fridays and Saturdays at 8 p.m., Sundays at 2 p.m. at the Westchester Playhouse. That's on Hendry Avenue in Westchester. You can find more information online at kentwoodplayers.org. And that's a bit of what's happening around town. For details on these and other cultural events in Southern California, visit performingartslive.com. For Arts Alive, I'm Alan Chapman.
Coming up on Arts Alive, is that percussionist asleep at the timpani? We ask the dean. But first, has World War I become just a sideline in history? If it has, a new project, the brainchild of Daniel Alfred Wachs, music director of the Orange County Youth Symphony Orchestra, seeks to correct that. Here's KUSC's Kelsey McConnell with more.
Wachs has spent years waiting for just the right pieces to come together so he could present a concert inspired by music about wartime.
I had the pleasure of serving as assistant conductor to the Minnesota Orchestra under Osmo Vanska, and he programmed a work called The Inextinguishable Nielsen's Symphony. I just was extraordinarily taken with the piece, and I made a promise to him about 10 years ago. I said, one day I'm going to program this piece. But one of the challenges of programming this particular work is, what do you program with it? And I thought, well, then there's the Ives unanswered question, which to me was, why? Why do we do war? Why do we go through all this conflict? So between the inextinguishable, we will prevail, we shall prevail, humankind will continue, and the why are we doing this to ourselves, left a bit of a gaping hole in the middle as to what would I put program-wise in the middle of it. We were very honored at OCYSO 2 years ago to give the West Coast premiere of a work by Mark Anthony Turnage called Freeze. And we were then asked if we would be interested in joining a consortium to premiere Passchendaele. It was a battle in Flanders. It was one of the turning points in the First World War. Extraordinarily bloody. And Mark Anthony's grandfather was there. So there's a personal connection for him also. And the piece is really beautiful. Mark Anthony, you know, is kind of, you know, when we say progressive British composer, it sounds like headbanging music. But this, I have to say, is a little bit of a departure maybe even for him. It's, you really feel that something really penetrated for him on this.
Wachs is bringing together several organizations for World War I, A Centenary Perspective. It's a series of programs that explore the musical and artistic response to wartime. The first event in the series is a panel discussion tomorrow about World War I's history and artistic legacy.
Well, one of the elements that we wanted to do was to try to bring basically more awareness, first of all, to the whole World War I centenary. Not only the concert and through the music itself, but also through the philosophical idea of an artistic reaction to war. So we're very lucky, we are deeply honored, actually, that we have been able to put together a panel that consists of, in no particular order, by the way, Dr. Jennifer Keane, who is a foremost World War I expert based at Chapman University, and especially also visual representation and iconography and all that of the war. We have John Mangum, who is president and director at the Philharmonic Society of Orange County. And interestingly enough, his background is in history and musicology. And of course, I mean, the great Dana Gioia, just named Poet Laureate of California, the former chairman of the National Endowment of the Arts. So, I mean, this is just a star-studded panel.
That discussion starts tomorrow, 2 p.m., at downtown Central Library. Then tomorrow night, the L.A. Phil presents OCYSO and their concert partner, L.A.'s Young Musicians Foundation Debut Orchestra. The joint concert starts at 7:30 and is part of the Phil's Sounds About Town series at Disney Hall. Wachs will conduct Ives' The Unanswered Question and the U.S. premiere of Mark Anthony Turnage's Passchendaele in the first half. Then Yuga Kohler, YMF's conductor, will take the baton for the Nielsen Symphony No. 4 in the second half. Kohler just started conducting YMF in the fall, and this concert is a bit of baptism by fire.
I auditioned for this position about a year ago. At the end of the audition process, they brought me in a room and said, "Hey, you got the job." And I was very happy about it. And at that very moment, they said, "Great, you're conducting Nielsen 4 in Disney Hall." And I said, what's going on? It was a bit of a shock for me. I mean, historically speaking, Nielsen is simply not a composer that a lot of 25-year-olds, 26-year-olds conduct.
I asked both conductors if World War I felt like ancient history to the young musicians they lead. They agreed it could seem that way. All the more reason to expose them to the themes and ideas rooted in these pieces.
And I think that if kids these days kind of begin to understand things in context, history in context, music in context, art in context, that maybe it'll expand their horizons. But they are so excited. Of course, the first time they read through the Nielsen, I told the kids as a joke almost, I said, "It will sound like Danish to you, but you will get used to it and you will understand the language." And now they absolutely love it.
I came across a quote which I thought was good, which is, "If there was ever music from another planet, this is it." It's not immediately visceral in the way, for instance, Tchaikovsky might be. There's an element of distance to it. At the same time, there's a lot of humor and quirk and wit kind of in between the crevices.
And it ends, though, in such an optimistic fashion. You know, we shall survive. We will get through this. To me, that's a very powerful message and a good message certainly to be sending to, you know, the future youth.
Closing out World War I, a centenary perspective, performers from both orchestras combine again for a chamber concert later this month at LACMA, part of the Sundays Live series at the museum.
What we wanted to do was highlight a little bit the before, the during, and the after of the war. We're going to begin with Schoenberg's Verklärte Nacht, and we're going to end with Schoenberg's second movement of his second chamber symphony, which was completed, I don't know, 5 miles down the road from LACMA. We're also very honored that Larry Cedar, the wonderful actor, will be reading letters in between the pieces that are quite powerful. These are letters that were written from the front, setting the tone for the next work.
That Sunday's Live concert at LACMA is a week from tomorrow, Sunday, January 17th at 6 p.m. Admission is free. And these ambitious concerts combining big ideas and complex music might just be the beginning when it comes to Kohler's tenure in L.A. I asked him what else he has planned for the Young Musicians Foundation debut orchestra.
I've instituted a series called the Great Music Series, which examines similarities between pieces from the classical canon and pieces of massively popular pop music. And the idea here being, let's really get an audience of people who have never listened to classical music before, but allow them to understand that there are these deep-rooted similarities musically and culturally. So our first installment of that I co-created with composer Steven Feigenbaum. It will be a comparison of Kanye West and Beethoven. It's called Yeethoven. There's more to come about this, but we're really excited about it.
Yuga Kohler is the music director of the Young Musicians Foundation Debut Orchestra. You can learn more about them at ymf.org. World War I, A Centenary Perspective, the series that includes the concerts and panel we've been discussing, are the brainchild of Daniel Alfred Wachs, music director of the Orange County Youth Symphony Orchestra. For more about them and the series, visit ocyso.org. For Arts Alive, I'm Kelsey McConnell.
Now here's Gail Eichenthal with a question for the percussion section and Dean Rob Cudieta of the USC Thornton School of Music.
You ask the questions, he's got the answers, or he asks one of his faculty members who do. It's time for Ask the Dean with Dean Rob Cudieta of the USC Thornton School of Music. Great to have you back.
Thank you, Gail. Always great to be here with these great questions.
We have a question from Jeff concerning the percussion section, and we haven't heard this one. He notices percussionists sometimes lay their heads flat against the big drums during concerts. It looks like they may be listening for tuning, but no action seems to directly follow or precede. What's going on?
Well, you know, it's those doggone percussionists. They're falling asleep on the job once again.
Laying their head softly against the drum.
Oh, that's so true. Well, for this one, I went to actually our percussion studio and talked with many of the students who were in there and just get their take on this. What's happening there is they are putting their head down so they can listen to the timpani, oftentimes called kettle drums. And the timpani are tunable drums. And they have to be oftentimes retuned even within a piece of music. And so they are putting their ear very, very close to the head. Then they're tapping the head so that they can actually hear it and tune it. And the way they tune it is that there's a pedal underneath, and it's very much like an accelerator gas pedal on a car. When you push it, the pitch goes up, and there's resistance to it because it tightens the head. So even though Jeff isn't seeing anything going on, they have their head down so that they can hear it, and then with their foot, they are actually changing the pitch. And sometimes it's just to retune it because it's gone out a little bit or the person wasn't happy with the tuning, or they're actually retuning it for the next entrance. So if a composer writes for a piece and wants the timpani tuned to a certain pitch at this measure, and then they're going to play again later, they have to actually make sure there's enough time for the person to retune the timpani in that. And, you know, timpani, there's many different numbers of timpani. You can see 2 timpani, up to 4 timpani within a piece. But some composers have just been in love with the timpani over the years. Berlioz is the perfect example of that. First of all, he played the timpani, so it makes sense that he would love that. In Symphonie Fantastique, he had 4 drums and 4 players, but then he went to 5 drums that took 3 players to play. But in the Requiem, he actually calls for 16 drums and 10 different players to do pieces.
Expensive to mount that,
I would absolutely imagine. And yeah, because most orchestras don't own that many drums, and so they have to get them from somewhere. And things like The Planets, I think, has 8 timpani in it. So they're wonderful. They add this great dimension. They add dynamic. Yeah, when the roll and a great climax to have the tuned timpani in there. But that's what they're doing. They're actually tuning that. Timpani were always just a supportive role within the orchestra. You'd never hear a timpani solo really until about the middle of the 20th century. And then people started actually writing solo works for timpani. One of the most famous is actually by William Kraft, who was the principal timpanist for the LA Phil. And he wrote a timpani concerto in the early 80s and performed regularly now. So anyway, that's what's happening. They are not dozing off. They are doing their job, and they are tuning. That's why their ear is down to the head of the drum.
Well, you know, it seems like we're living through a time of the emancipation of the percussion. I'm thinking of all the wonderful virtuosic ensembles that have come to the fore. I heard So Percussion at Ojai a couple of years ago, and it was just enchanting. And Evelyn Glennie has become a world-renowned soloist.
As a deaf musician, yes. Yeah, there's no doubt that if you look at the 20th century in classical music, in all music really, rhythm became extremely important. If you go back to the 19th century, melody, harmony were absolutely the dominant part of the music. In the 20th century, starting really with Stravinsky, with the Rite of Spring, boy, rhythm just becomes the dominant thing. So, of course, if rhythm is going to become a dominant factor or more important than it was before, it makes sense you're going to have more percussionists, and the percussionists are going to play a larger role. And you know, we found that in all music in the 20th century, in jazz, we found it in popular music, we found it in classical music. So when these influences come in for composers, it usually isn't just one aspect. It's all musicians across the board. So it makes sense that it influenced classical music as well.
Well, they better not be sleeping on the job.
No.
All right, thanks so much, Dino.
Thanks, Gail.
Do you have a question for Dean Rob Kudieta and his team of musical experts? Send an email to askthedean@kusc.org. Again, that's askthedean@kusc.org. Or you can submit a question on Twitter. We're at @ClassicalKUSC, and just use the hashtag KUSC Ask the Dean. And that wraps up this edition of Arts Alive for this Saturday, the 9th of January. The technical director is Mark Hatwan. Kelsey McConnell is the executive producer. We had help this week from KUSC's Gail Eichenthal and Alan Chapman. Thanks also to Sheila Tepper. I'm Brian Lauritsen. Have a great weekend.